Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Anthony Weiner, Arnold Schwarzenegger, DSK, John Edwards, John Ensign, Chris Lee, David Vitter, Mark Sanford, Larry Craig, Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich, Elliot Spitzer. Need I go on? Why did they do it? Let's take a step back from the details of Anthony Weiner's sordid online life and whether he should resign and ask the question that has been on many of your minds.
How about a show about what makes people run and what kind of people are actually representing us? I would love to have someone do a psychological study of the kinds of people who are always unzipping their pants and doing all of the kinds of silly things, misappropriating funds, lying. Why are they?
Right.
Why do they seem to be in the forefront of the political representatives that we have in our country?
One of the most important questions we could ask, and we will. I'll promise you that segment, Barbara. Thank you for calling.
I appreciate it.
Barbara in Bell Harbor, we are keeping that promise. Do politicians engage in more scandalous behaviors than the rest of us? Or do we just notice them more because they are more in the public eye? Listeners, what do you think? 212-433-WNYC or post to our politics website. It's a free country. .org. In fact, on that page, we have an interactive 30-year timeline of politician sex scandals by our producer, Alana Casanova-Burgess. She just finished this morning. Check it out, complete with historical video of some of these 35 politician sex scandals over the last 30 years at itsafreecountry.org. In David Brooks' column today, he suggests that we get human nature backwards. Today, we assume insiders are corrupt, and we look for the innocent outsider who can come in and bring sweeping change. But in the 18th century, he says, Edmund Burke and Anthony Trollope, political writers of their time, saw insiders as more likely to be virtuous because they are constrained to be prudent by the norms of the state. Maybe. My first guest today has her own theories. Deborah Grenfeld teaches leadership and organizational behavior at Stanford. And she has done some widely recognized research on how people with power act compared to people with little power. She finds, for example, that power tends to be disinhibiting and encourages people to treat others as means to an end. And she studied the decisions of United States Supreme Court justices to see if their decisions and their reasoning are influenced by their power relative to each other. Let's find out more. Professor Grenfeld, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks. Good morning.
What was your interest in studying power and behavior inspired? Was your interest in studying power and behavior inspired by the kinds of things we're seeing in the news right now or earlier examples of them? I think many Americans, jaded as we already are, have been taken aback by what feels like a concentration of sex or relationship scandals or even sexual violence allegations in the case of DSK just coming one after another right now.
Yeah. Well, it's a very interesting time for someone like me because there are just so many examples of the kind of thing that I've been interested in studying for about 20 years. And I would say my interests were inspired certainly by experiences that I had with people who I worked with in my earlier life, whose behavior surprised me sometimes and led me to try to understand better what is the experience psychologically of people when they find themselves in very high power positions.
So to start answering the question, is it something about politicians? Let's hear about some of your research. For example, this idea that power is disinhibiting. I guess it sounds intuitively right. It would seem like a good hypothesis in Anthony Weiner's case, for example. The more power you have, the less inhibitions you have about doing whatever you want. What kinds of studies did you do?
Well, let's see. We started with with this basic idea, just to back up a little bit, which I think is different from what you hear a lot in the kind of conventional wisdom or lay interpretations of what's going on with some of the people who you've listed. We started with the premise that it's really not bad people who get themselves into positions of power or who go into politics. They're just humans like the rest of us, and that situations are very powerful, and that in particular, our interest was driven by the assumption that where a person ranks in a social hierarchy has a tremendous effect on their behavior. And this is something you can see in animals as well. It's very, very widely observed in animals, you know, as it is. And so we started to look for evidence of this in humans. And some of the earlier studies showed, for example, that one of the things that happens to people when they find themselves in positions of power is that they become very impulsive or action-oriented. So the idea there is that, you know, most of us have bad impulses all the time. It's just part of being human. We're sort of self-interested in that way. But the average person who does not have a very high social rank or a large degree of power thinks very hard about whether to act on those things or not. So we have a tendency to regulate our behavior in response mm-hmm. to what we think some of the social consequences might be.
Right.
And our hypothesis was that when people find themselves in positions of power, they stop trying to regulate their behavior. So what you're seeing really is a more true expression of the person in power. And the impulses might not differ that much from what other people experience, but most of us just don't act on them.
Yeah, the inhibitions
right.
differ. But are there also countervailing forces to power as a disinhibitor? One of the Edmund Burke quotes in the David Brooks piece today is that politicians become, quote, habituated to the sensorial inspection of the public eye. So wouldn't power also constrain politicians' behavior because they know they are under more scrutiny than the rest of us?
Well, you would think so, but somehow it doesn't seem to work that way. And I think part of what our research shows helps to explain why this doesn't operate in the way that Burke would have suspected, which is that we find also that when people are in positions of power, they stop taking others' perspectives. So what we found, you know, one of the general hypotheses that we have in our work is that power just makes people very fixated in a kind of a single-minded way on the pursuit of their own goals. And so what happens is that there's just a disinclination to think about how they're being perceived by other people. So the pressures may very well be there. But what our work shows is that when people get into power, they're focused more on rewards than threats, and they're less likely to take the perspective of people who might disapprove or have some kind of a negative impact on their lives and their careers. I think the other thing that's kind of interesting about this is that in order for Burke's idea to really work, you'd want to see really extreme kinds of consequences for people who act out in these ways, and I'm not sure that history bears that out either.
Listeners, do politicians engage in more scandalous behavior than the rest of us, or do we just notice it more because they are in the public eye? We're talking with Stanford organizational behavior professor Deborah Grunfeld, who studies power, and you with your questions or comments, 212-433-WNYC, though our lines are already full, are you surprised? Or post your thoughts to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, or to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Deborah in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I would just say that I think that we just notice it more. And as I have talked to many friends before, from the time I... a young lady of 16, including myself, I've been hit on by a lot of single men, but more married men than I care to mention. And unfortunately for them, I never responded, and I was insulted by the fact that they were married and hitting on me. In the case of a politician, he's in the public eye. So when he's acting badly, boy is behaving badly, and gets caught because they're stupid, we all know about it.
So you've seen it in private life all over the place. What about that? I realize this is all anecdotal, Professor, but, you know, Deborah has been hit on by a lot of married non-politicians.
Yes, I don't think her experience is unusual at all, and I would not discount that idea at all. I think there's probably a lot of truth to that. One of the interesting questions that comes up a lot when I talk with people about this is why we don't see women engage in these kinds of behavior. And I actually believe that women are equally susceptible to these kinds of things when they're in positions of power. But because women are underrepresented at the highest levels, we don't see the same kinds of examples in their behavior. And I would argue that she's probably absolutely right. I think that's a big part of it.
Interesting. Now, in the timeline that we have of 35 politician sex scandals over the last 30 years, only two are women. And one of the two is really just an allegation that has not been proven at all.
Right.
So, you know, maybe that's the proportion of women in positions of political power over the last 30 years, but it still seems like, you know, I don't know. But women are there just gender differences here? You said women would be likely to do as much as men, but maybe when it comes to sex, there are just gender differences as to what people want.
Yeah. This is such an interesting question, and it's something that my work doesn't speak to all that directly, but I can tell you what I know about other research on power and how it helps inform the conversation. In my research, what we find is that when we take, you know, a random sample of people, men, women from all walks of life, and we put them in conditions of power, so we randomly assign them to a situation where we give them power over other people, men and women rarely differ in how they respond to that. So we see disinhibition in women in exactly the same ways that we see it in men, and there are very, very few differences that turn up when men and women are in power. What I would say, though, is that there's another line of research that's looked at the motivation to attain power in life, and that research does show differences between men and women, and the argument there What the research has shown is that people who are very highly motivated to attain positions of power, and this could apply to some of the people in, you know, in high-level national politics that we've been talking about, there tends to be a lot of scandal and profligate behavior among people with this very high power motive, unless they feel highly responsible for someone else. So one of these studies looked at U.S. presidents and showed that U.S. presidents who had younger siblings were less likely to engage in scandalous behavior while in office than people who didn't. And that could explain why, if there's a difference between men and women in positions of power, to the extent that women take greater responsibility for children, let's say, or tend to be more relationally oriented, you might see a lower rate of scandal in men versus women in these types of positions. So I don't think we really understand exactly what's going on here, but what I can tell you is some evidence suggests that once they're in power, men and women, at least in my research, really don't differ in their behavior, but there does seem to be some differences in the motivation to attain power and how people with that motivation respond to it.
Tim in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I'm in advertising and been nipping at the exterior, the outside of these various spheres of influence, a lot of political campaigns. And it was explained to me very carefully by old hands that, Tim, they're not in it for the money, they're in it for the love.
Yeah.
And it's the very impulse that drives you to seek this out. And it can be the purest, most idealistic impulse imaginable.
Right.
Also contains within it the seed of what leads to these spectacular, completely exotic, uncharacteristic explosions of this kind of thing. I've seen it on local campaigns with the very, very best people, ex-ministers who suddenly found it just too much to bear, too intoxicating. I think it's the very, very impulse that drives them to seek this out is what makes them so vulnerable to this kind of thing.
Professor, not the money, it's the love.
Yeah, I mean, this is another very, very astute observation. And there are scholars who have written about this and made exactly this argument, which is that the motivation, the human motivation for love and the motivation for power are kind of inextricably linked, because part of what happens when you attain power is that more people become attracted to you. And then, of course, the paradox and irony of this is that when people are attracted to you because of your power, you never trust that it's love anyway. So that, I think, is part of what creates this insatiable desire to keep attaining more, which is that it never satisfies the impulse in the end, because there's a cynicism that develops in positions of power. Your assumption is that other people are just trying to get something from you. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a very astute observation, and I believe that it's probably explains at least some of why the sexual scandal is so closely related to people in high power positions.
Tim, thank you. So why then would that work with the piece of your research that you mentioned earlier where you found that power reduces our ability to understand other people's perspectives? You said that, right?
Yes,
because
isn't
there a cross current that if politicians have to win thousands of votes and millions of campaign dollars to keep their jobs, because they have to, you know, they have to seek this love just to keep their jobs, aren't they also likely to be people pleasers, like they say Bill Clinton is, for example, finely attuned to other people's perspectives so they can seem like they feel our pain more than the next guy, and then they would understand other people's perspectives more, not less?
You would think so, and somehow it doesn't really work that way. And my sense is it's probably because that single-minded, you know, goal sort of trumps everything else. You'd like to see, I think that just requires a level of attention to detail in the social landscape that sort of disappears when people have power.
My guest, Deborah Gruen from the Stanford Business School, talking about politicians and scandal, and are they really different from the rest of us, or do we just notice it more? 212-433-WNYC. And Ahmed in Sunnyside, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ahmed.
Yeah, Brian, how you doing? I have give a thought about this. What is the solution? Because scandal after scandal, the politicians, and they should be a role model for our generation. And this is really unacceptable. And I propose very radical solution, which is the politician should allow to marry more than one wife if they are, if they need to have a second woman in the eyes of the community, in the eyes of everybody.
They already do that in some countries, don't they?
So why not? That's my proposal.
Thank you very much. Okay. Very funny. William in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, William.
Yes. It seems to me that one important consideration has been overlooked, that certain personality types are drawn to power. Certain the aggressive types, the arrogant types, the types that we call type A personalities, they're drawn to power. And it seems to me they're the ones who would be more likely to abuse power. The very ones who are drawn to it by their makeup, by their nature, are the ones more likely to abuse it. They are the ones that we don't like when we encounter them on the highway driving aggressively. The same ones, it seems to me, are drawn to politics, not to say that every politician is so, but I think a higher proportion, you'll find a higher proportion of such types among politicians, corporate types, and so on, mm-hmm. drawn to power by the very nature of their personality.
Yeah, another theory that makes intuitive sense. Professor?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting, right? Because we just made the argument that it's the need for love that draws people to power, and this is really the yin to that yang.
Yeah.
And I think they're both true, and to me this just speaks to, I don't know that there are personality characteristics that predict it. I think what ends up happening is that everyone has, you know, their basic universal kinds of human drives and motives, and then there are these different personalities, and my assumption is always that when you find yourself, I mean, most people are drawn to have more power rather than less, because most of us want to control our own outcomes anyway. And once we find ourselves in positions of power, what you're getting is just a more true expression of what was underneath to begin with. I mean, that said, there is evidence that one of the dimensions or personality dimensions on which people differ is their dominance orientation, how aggressive they are. And my suspicion is, and again, we haven't looked at this in particular. My suspicion is that when you see people, you know, very aggressive, type A, need for dominance, people in positions of power, you'd see different types of scandal. So, I think it's very interesting, for example, to compare, the head of the IMF with what we saw in Anthony Weiner. Right? These are very different types of sexual acts and sex scandals, and those kinds of things might very well be predicted by personality going in. But I think the disinhibition is happening across the board.
So one more thing before we run out of time. What about there being a personality type, and maybe it goes with just the kind of type A, guy that William is talking about, that is drawn to politics, that is also reckless? Because one of the defining features of the Wiener scandal or the Spitzer scandal, by the way, it's Elliot Spitzer's birthday today, apropos of nothing. Happy birthday, Elliot Spitzer, who will be a guest on the show next Tuesday. Bill Clinton as president, how reckless was that?
Yes.
DSK, you know, others, the sheer recklessness of what they did, knowing how easy it would be to get caught and how high the stakes are for them.
Yep, absolutely. So, and I, you know, again, it's going to be the same theme that I've said before. So one of the things that we have seen in research is very specifically that when people are put in positions of power, their preference for risk actually changes. And this is part of the disinhibition profile. So people are more risk-seeking and more risk-tolerant once they're in positions of power. And that said, again, outside of my own expertise, but I think this makes intuitive sense, the more risk-tolerant people are to begin with, the more likely they are to ascend to these very high-level positions, right? I mean, you have to have a certain level of drive, a certain level of entrepreneurship, and a sense that you can do things other people haven't done in order to get into these positions. So again, I think that's probably operating on both ends. Yes, there may be a recklessness or a high risk tolerance in these people to begin with, but one of the things that we see in our research over and over again is that the risk preference actually changes once people have power.
Well, Barbara in Bell Harbor, who started this whole thing by calling in the other day and asking us to examine what it is about politicians that make them different from the rest of us. I hope you got something of an answer there. And we thank everybody who called in. You can keep this conversation going on our politics webpage. It's freecountry.org. Deborah Grunfeld, who teaches leadership and organizational behavior at Stanford, thank you so much for sharing your research and your insights with us.
My pleasure.
And also on It's a Free Country, we have an interactive 30-year timeline of politician sex scandals by our producer, Alana Casanova Burgess, just up this morning. Check it out, complete with historical video at itsafreecountry.org. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More in a minute.